Hi, I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! For more than 15 years, CJSF 90.1 FM has been bringing Democracy Now! To the greater Vancouver area every weekday at 11 a.m.
From New York and Telluride, Colorado, this is Democracy Now!
And don't just say this is about thoughts and prayers right now. These kids were literally praying. It was the first week of school. They were in a church. These are kids that should be learning with their friends.
The city of Minneapolis is in mourning after two children aged 8 and 10 were shot dead and 17 others were injured when a former student fired through the windows of a church at a Catholic school. We'll speak to the head of Brady, the leading gun control group. Then it was 20 years ago this week when Hurricane Katrina devastated New Orleans and the Gulf Coast, killing 1,800 people and forcing over a million people to evacuate. We'll look back at our coverage and go to New Orleans to speak to independent journalist Jordan Flaherty and former Black Panther Malik Rahim, who co-founded the Common Ground Collective.
Sad part about it, it could happen today. Deja vu is alive and well here, because if a hurricane would happen right now, we are ill-prepared for it, the same way we was ill-prepared 20 years ago.
All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. I'm Nermeen Sheikh. A column of Israeli tanks pushed further into the outskirts of Gaza City overnight, shelling Palestinian homes and prompting terrified residents to flee. The offensive came as Israeli attacks across the Gaza Strip killed at least 17 people, while medical workers reported four more deaths from famine and malnutrition over the past 24 hours, including two children. That brings the total number of starvation-related deaths in Gaza to 317. This comes as new research published in The Lancet finds nearly a third of outpatients treated by the medical charity Médecins Sans Frontières in its Gaza field hospitals were children under the age of 15. MSF warns that explosive weapons designed to be used in open battlefields are increasingly being used to target Palestinians in urban areas. At the United Nations, 14 of the Security Council's 15 members issued a joint statement Wednesday calling for an immediate and permanent ceasefire in Gaza, the release of all hostages held by Hamas and other groups, a surge of humanitarian aid, and for Israel to immediately and unconditionally lift all restrictions on aid delivery. Only the United States opposed the statement. Guyanese diplomat Trishala Persaud spoke to reporters, flanked by other UN ambassadors demanding an end to Israel's siege.
We note that at least 41,000 children are at heightened risk of death from malnutrition between now and June 2026. This is a man-made crisis. The use of starvation as a weapon of war is clearly prohibited under international humanitarian law. Famine in Gaza must be stopped immediately.
In California, police arrested 138 peaceful protesters Wednesday as they occupied the office, the lobby of Senator Alex Padilla's offices in San Francisco to demand an end to U.S. arms shipments to Israel. Among those arrested were rabbis, spiritual leaders, and descendants of Holocaust survivors. Elsewhere, Jewish Voice for Peace held protests in the lobby of a Sacramento hotel where Senator Padilla was attending a conference and outside Padilla's offices in San Diego. Meanwhile, in Los Angeles, dozens of Jewish peace activists held an hours-long sit-in protest in the offices of California's other senator, Adam Schiff. Last month, Senators Padilla and Schiff voted against a resolution sponsored by Senator Bernie Sanders and backed by two dozen members of the Democratic caucus that seeks to block arms sales to Israel. A Russian missile and drone attack on Kyiv overnight killed at least 15 people, including four children. It was the deadliest attack on the Ukrainian capital in weeks. Russian drones also hit Ukraine's energy infrastructure in several regions, leaving more than 100,000 Ukrainian homes without power. This comes as Ukrainian drones have also been striking Russian oil refineries, leading to surging oil prices and fuel shortages in Russia. Meanwhile, Ukraine has acknowledged that Russian forces have captured two villages in the eastern region of Dnipro for the first time in 3.5 years of war. One Ukrainian official told the BBC that this is the first Russian attack on such a large scale in the region. It came as President Trump has been trying to broker a ceasefire agreement between Russia and Ukraine. On Wednesday, the Kremlin said that it will not accept NATO troops stationed in Ukraine as part of any ceasefire deal. U.S. and Russian officials discussed energy deals during recent peace talks to end the war in Ukraine. That's according to Reuters, which reports the discussions took place during U.S. envoy Steve Witkoff's trip to Moscow earlier this month, as well as during the Trump-Putin-Alaska summit on August 15th. One of the deals would involve ExxonMobil re-entering Russia's Sakhalin 1 oil and gas project. Exxon left Russia shortly after it attacked Ukraine in 2022, which prompted a wave of Western sanctions against Russia. The Wall Street Journal is also reporting that Exxon's CEO has discussed the company's return to Russia with President Trump in recent weeks. This comes as President Trump has hit India with tariffs of 50%, citing India's imports of Russian oil. In Minnesota, a shooter opened fire at a Catholic school in South Minneapolis Wednesday, killing two children and injuring 17 people. The shooter died of a self-inflicted gunshot wound at the scene after firing through the windows at students who were sitting in pews in the church. This is Weston Halsney, a fifth grader who described watching a friend get shot in the back. He spoke to the local TV station Fox 9.
Shot in the back. He's in the hospital right now. It was super scary because, like, we've never practiced it in the church. We've only practiced it in the main school. So we really didn't know what to do. My friend, he was like laying on top of me, like making sure I was safe, and he got hit. So that was really brave of him.
And you have a nick on your neck?
Yeah, that was, I don't even know what it's from. Kind of looks like debris or something.
Police say the attacker legally purchased weapons used in Wednesday's mass shooting, including a rifle, a pistol, and a shotgun. Prior to the attack, the gunman showed off the weapons in a video uploaded to YouTube. The video has since been taken down. After headlines, we'll speak with Chris Brown, president of Brady, one of the oldest gun violence prevention organizations in the U.S. The White House said late Wednesday it had fired the director of the Centers for Disease Control, Susan Munares, after she refused to resign, saying her views were, quote, not aligned with the president's agenda of making America healthy again, unquote. Munares was confirmed by the Senate as CDC director less than a month ago. In a statement late Wednesday, her lawyers accused HHS and Health Secretary Robert F. Kennedy Jr. of putting millions of lives at risk by firing career experts and seasoned scientists while weaponizing public health. They write, quote, when CDC Director Susan Munares refused to rubber stamp unscientific, reckless directives and fire dedicated health experts, she chose protecting the public over serving a political agenda. For that, she's been targeted, unquote. Meanwhile, three senior CDC officials resigned in protest Wednesday. Dr. Deb Hoodie, Deputy Director for Program and Science and Chief Medical Officer at CDC. Dr. Dimitri Daskalakis, Director of the National Center for Immunization and Respiratory Diseases. And Dr. Daniel Jernigan, Director of the National Center for Emerging and Zoonotic Infectious Diseases. In a resignation email, Dr. Hoodie wrote, quote, for the good of the nation and the world, the science at CDC should never be censored or subject to political pauses or interpretations. Vaccines save lives. This is an indisputable, well-established scientific fact, unquote. The Food and Drug Administration has approved updated COVID vaccines for the fall season, with new restrictions on who can access booster shots. Under the FDA plan, COVID shots remain authorized for people who are 65 and older or at higher risk of severe disease from an infection. Younger adults would be eligible to receive shots only if they have underlying medical conditions, putting them at higher risk. The authorization still needs the approval of the CDC's Advisory Committee on Immunization Practices. In June, Health and Human Services Secretary Robert F. Kennedy Jr. fired all 17 of the committee's members and replaced them with vaccine skeptics. COVID-19 remains a major driver of disability and mortality in the United States, with over 44,000 COVID deaths reported last year. The Transportation Department announced Wednesday that it's taking over management of the district's Union Station from Amtrak. This comes after President Trump deployed thousands of National Guard troops to D.C., despite crime in the city being at its lowest level in decades. National Guard troops are reportedly conducting the duties of local park staffers due to DOGE cuts. They're spreading mulch and picking up trash. Meanwhile, a grand jury declined to indict the former Justice Department employee who threw a sandwich at one of the federal officers deployed to D.C. by President Trump. And prosecutors also failed to convince a grand jury to indict a woman who was accused of assaulting an FBI agent during an immigration raid in the city last month. Meanwhile, Washington, D.C. Mayor Muriel Bowser, a Democrat, on Wednesday had praise for Trump's crackdown, saying it's reduced crime in the district.
This federal surge has had a significant increase on crime in Washington, D.C., and we greatly appreciate the surge of officers that enhance what MPD has been able to do in this city.
Bowser's praise for the D.C. crackdown came as the mayor's office seeks to restore $1.1 billion cut from the district's budget by congressional Republicans earlier this year, and as the White House is dangling a $2 billion infrastructure proposal for what it called the, quote, beautification of the nation's capital. Mayor Bowser said Wednesday she supported the infrastructure plan, which civil rights leaders, including Reverend Al Sharpton, have condemned as cover for racial profiling. And the California Senate has unanimously passed a resolution that would probe the state's imports of crude oil extracted from the Amazon. The resolution also calls for an eventual end to California's reliance on these crude imports.
In the Amazon is not just good for the communities that live there, but our climate here in California. California is dependent on the Amazon for temperature and rainfall regulation. In other words, our fates are linked. And I'm going to share a shocking stat. 50% of the oil exported from the Amazon ends up in California refineries.
This follows years of advocacy from indigenous groups in South America. In June, a high-level indigenous delegation from Ecuador's Amazon met with lawmakers in Sacramento and staged a protest near a Chevron refinery. Meanwhile, Ecuador and Peru are moving ahead to expand drilling in the Amazon. And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Nermeen Sheikh in New York, joined by Amy Goodman in Telluride, Colorado. Hi, Amy.
Hi, Nermeen, and welcome to our listeners and viewers around the country and around the world. The city of Minneapolis is in mourning after two children, aged 8 and 10, were shot dead. 17 others injured when a former student fired dozens of shots through the stained glass church windows at Annunciation Catholic School. At the time of the shooting, the students were sitting in pews at morning mass during their first week back to school. The injured include 14 children and three elderly parishioners. Police say the 23-year-old attacker died from a self-inflicted gunshot wound. Authorities have described the shooter as a former student at the school who reportedly posted two videos on YouTube displaying handwritten journals and weapons with the names of other school shooters written on them. Minneapolis Mayor Jacob Frey addressed the community after the shooting.
Don't just say this is about thoughts and prayers right now. These kids were literally praying. It was the first week of school. They were in a church. These are kids that should be learning with their friends. They should be playing on the playground. They should be able to go to school or church in peace without the fear or risk of violence, and their parents should have the same kind of assurance. These are the sort of basic assurances that every family should have every step of the day, regardless of where they are in our country.
Mayor Fry also condemned attempts to villainize the trans community after police said the shooter was transgender.
Anybody who is using this as an opportunity to villainize our trans community or any other community out there has lost their sense of common humanity. We should not be operating out of a place of hate for anyone. We should be operating from a place of love for our kids. Kids died today.
We're joined now by Chris Brown, the president of Brady, one of the oldest gun violence prevention organizations in the U.S. Welcome back to Democracy Now! Chris, if you could just begin by responding to this attack. You're the president of one of the oldest gun violence prevention organizations in the country. What can be done to prevent violence like what we saw yesterday and we see basically on a quotidian basis in this country?
I wish I was here under better circumstances, but thanks for having me. Not only as the president of Brady, but also as a mom, it's heartbreaking to experience days like yesterday and know so many parents that I've met who also have lost their kids in gun violence at schools. So we are rightly looking at the kinds of things that we could do to prevent this. In this particular instance, it does appear that this individual acquired these guns lawfully, although that needs to be verified. But Minneapolis is in Minnesota, and in 2024, Governor Walz signed what's called an extreme risk protection law. That law provides the ability for firearms to be removed from individuals who are deemed by a court to be at risk to themselves or others. We're still looking at the facts and circumstances here, but I can tell you in other states with a richer history, a longer enacted extreme risk protection law, it's exactly in these kinds of circumstances that you see the successful removal of firearms, which then also prohibits the individual from acquiring firearms during the pendency of that order. So I think the question we have to ask ourselves is not what is the one or two things that we need to do to address the scourge of gun violence and this particular kind of gun violence, but what are all of the things that we need to do? Because, Amy, firearms are the number one killer of our kids in America. That's a uniquely American problem. If you live in America, you're 26 times more likely to be shot than any other industrialized country. So we need to embrace this as an issue that is solvable, and we know that it is, because in states that have better gun laws, better enforcement, we have material reductions in gun death and injury. And just like the mayor said of Minneapolis, our kids' lives are worth this investment.
Chris Brown, you are the president of Brady. For those who maybe are too young to know who Brady is named for, Jim Brady, the press secretary for President Ronald Reagan, shot in the head during the attempted assassination of President Reagan. If you can talk about from Reagan now to Trump, especially under Trump's second term, how the laws are changing around guns and gun control.
Yeah, thanks for that question. So, yes, Brady is named after Jim and Sarah Brady. Jim was shot in the head while serving as President Ronald Reagan's press secretary. He and his wife fought for 6 years, and there were 7 votes in Congress to pass our nation's background check system. That law has stopped more than 5 million purchases of firearms to individuals we all agree should not have access to them. We then passed the assault weapons ban that was allowed to sunset. And we have, with former President Biden, accomplished a great deal in gun violence prevention. That's how, in part, we have material reductions in violent crime in cities across America, including my own city of Washington, D.C., which has a 40-year low of violent crime. President Trump, since taking office in this term in particular, has every day attempted to reverse those gains. And that puts us at substantial risk. Let me just name a few things. First, President Biden had established the Office of Gun Violence Prevention within the White House, recognizing gun violence as a public health epidemic. On day one of President Trump's office, he dismantled that office within the White House and created instead a Second Amendment task force to look at where and how any insurrectionist view of the Second Amendment was being infringed in any way. Then he set about reversing all of the executive actions and orders that President Biden had put in place that were working, including the zero tolerance policy by the ATF that actually ensured that gun dealers that were illegally selling firearms were shut down or reformed. He dismantled that entire program. He also redirected about 80% of the ATF agents, and the ATF is the only department in the federal government that actually inspects our nation's gun dealers, of which we have more than McDonald's and Starbucks combined. So he's taken those agents and he's redirected them to immigration enforcement. We also, in the Bipartisan Safer Communities Act, passed after Uvalde, 16 Republicans voted yes on that, by the way, had provided unprecedented funding for community violence intervention, at least $180 million in grants. He rescinded all of those. And speaking of school shootings, the Bipartisan Safer Communities Act also provided $1 billion to support mental health in our nation's schools. He had the Department of Education rescind all of those funds. Amy, I don't have enough time. I could go on and on and on. A lot of these are both direct activities that he is directing his agencies to undertake, and he's doing a lot behind the scenes as well, including restoring gun rights of convicted felons. That has never happened. And comparing this to President Ronald Reagan, let's recall that Ronald Reagan actually supported gun violence prevention, including the Brady Law. So we have a stark contrast in approach between these two individuals, and the actions I fear that President Trump is undertaking will make all of us far less safe.
And according to the Washington Post, Trump's handpicked interim U.S. attorney for the District of Columbia, former Fox News personality Jeanine Pirro, had instructed prosecutors to maximize criminal charges against anyone arrested during Trump's federal takeover of Washington, D.C., law enforcement, with the exception of people carrying rifles or shotguns in violation of D.C. laws. In those cases, she said prosecutors should not seek felony charges. What exactly does that mean?
Your guess is as good as mine. It's the strangest and most kind of risky approach for someone who claims to be about safety to say, well, if you're openly carrying a firearm in violation of D.C. law, we are going to say that we will not press charges against you. To the average person, what message is that sending? It's pretty clear to me what message that's sending. And that is, if you're someone who believes in a kind of vigilante sort of justice, or you're a member of a militia, well, come on, come into D.C., carry firearms openly, because you won't be prosecuted for doing that. And I'm sorry, but I work in D.C. I have many friends in D.C. There's no question that the way that the this is all being administered is highly racialized. And we see that happening over and over and over again. If you happen to be a person of color driving your car near one of their many checkpoints, you are very often pulled over compared to someone who is not a person of color. And so I just think what we will see here are individuals who are potentially creating a much more dangerous environment by openly carrying firearms We already have a situation in D.C. with the January 6th insurrection that has been studied over and over and over again, where President Trump never called the National Guard. That was a national emergency, never called the National Guard. And D.C.'s gun laws, we know the lack of open carry meant that the individuals who participated in that January 6th insurrection did not have firearms. If they had, we would have had a potential bloodbath on our hands. It is not in anyone's interest, not the residents of D.C. or the many visitors who come to our nation's capital, to permit open carry of firearms. And to have Jeanine Pirro say she won't enforce the existing law is an absolute aberration. And she will have blood on her hands if, as a result of that, she invites people coming in with open firearms and there is any kind of violence on the streets in D.C.
Chris Brown, president of Brady, one of the nation's oldest gun violence prevention organizations. Thank you so much for joining us. Coming up, it was 20 years ago this week when Hurricane Katrina devastated New Orleans and the Gulf Coast, killing over 1,800 people and forcing over a million people to evacuate. Back in a minute. Zapateado by Las Cafeteras in our Democracy Now! Studio. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org. I'm Nermeen Sheikh in New York with Amy Goodman in Telluride, Colorado. This week marks the 20th anniversary of Hurricane Katrina, the 2005 storm that devastated the Gulf Coast, killing more than 1,800 people and forcing more than a million to evacuate.
Rest of the hour, looking back at Hurricane Katrina and at where New Orleans is today. We'll speak with Malik Rahim, founder of Common Ground Relief, as well as journalist Jordan Flaherty. But first, we go back to some of our coverage of Katrina from 20 years ago as we went back and forth to New Orleans. It begins with then New Orleans Mayor Ray Nagin.
Ladies and gentlemen, I wish I had better news for you, but we are facing a storm that most of us have feared. Every person is hereby ordered to immediately evacuate the city of New Orleans, or, if no other alternative is available, to immediately move to one of the facilities within the city that will be designated as a refuge of last resort.
And the Gulf Coast region remain in a state of catastrophe following the devastating Hurricane Katrina. At least 80% of New Orleans is underwater. The city has no electricity and little drinkable water. Officials say New Orleans will be uninhabitable for weeks. On Tuesday, two levees broke, flooding areas of the city that appeared to survive the storm.
This is a national disaster. Get every doggone Greyhound bus line in the country and get their asses moving to New Orleans. That's they thinking small, man, and this is a major, major, major deal.
Talking about tens of of thousands of people who are left behind, and those are the sickest, the oldest, poorest, the youngest, the people with disabilities and the like, and the plan was that everybody should leave. Well, you can't leave if you're in a hospital. You can't leave if you're a nurse. You can't leave if you're a patient. You can't leave if you're in a nursing home. You can't leave if you don't have a car. There are throngs of people, easily in the tens of thousands, maybe 40 to 50,000 people, in my estimation, standing on this plaza trying